Okay, it's April 11th, right?
Yeah.
April 11th, and we're going to start investments, yay!
Finally!
Got rid of nasty insurance. But we have today our introduction to investments, and then hopefully at the end we will do the bond calc. So we'll jump right into the bond calculations and do as many as we can, because they're not... They're scary looking. People go, but then when you start plugging the numbers, you go, this is hard. And then we'll do them again on Tuesday, because next Thursday is our next exam, where we will do chapters 8, 9, and 10, insurance. Make sure you understand those automobile liability limits, which are a little tricky. Any one person, all people, the most important automobile liability. And then the bond calcs again, which are... Don't worry, just do the best you can. Don't worry, just put some numbers in and see what you can do. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Do you want an investing joke? it's tough. It's tough. Okay. How do you make a small fortune in the stock market? Are you told this one already? Okay, we'll do the bond joke next week. Because the bond jokes, you won't get it until you learn about bonds. So how about a battle of the sexes jokes, right? And so this guy was talking with his buddy, and he's saying, somebody stole my wife's credit card. And his buddy said, well, did you report it to the police? He goes, no. He's spending less than she did. You knew that one already. Okay. One real quick thing. We're going to get them to come, I think. I hope we find time for them to come. But we have this wonderful program on campus called CalWORKS. Anybody familiar with it? If you have kids, you need to talk with these people. Whoa. If you have any children, you definitely need to talk with these people, because they are awesome. Zoom out. There are all kinds of programs to help you, especially with the little niños. So... check out CalWORKS on campus. Hopefully it will come all throughout the semester, throughout the week. That's good enough for that. That's my plug. There's the plug of CalWORKS. Because we're ready to start investing. And look, this guy figured it out 2,500 years ago. If a little money does not go out, great money cannot come in. And we're going to see that today. We're going to see that. We already saw it way back in chapter 1. So we're going to go back to chapter 1 and realize that you don't need, assuming you're young, assuming you're consistent, don't panic. And the world doesn't end. You should do very well. But first, let's do a little bit of Jeopardy here. The answer is a volunteer tax on stupid people. A volunteer tax on stupid people. What's the question?
The lottery.
That's it, yes. What is the lottery? It's a voluntary tax on stupid people. Do you play the lottery? Don't tell me. Okay, the odds of winning the California Mega Millions jackpot are 176 million to one. But somebody has to win, right? Isn't that what people say? Somebody has to. It ain't going to be you. You're not going to die of botulism. You're not going to get struck by lightning, which actually happens a whole lot more often than winning the lottery. If a person purchases 50 lottery tickets each week, he or she will win the Mega Millions jackpot about once every 50,000 years.
That's a lot of money.
Let's see, 50,000 years, 10%, $50 a week. People say, but you got to look at my number. I use this computer program, and it's 5, 22, 17, 8. And I say, why don't you just use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? And they go, well, that's not going to hit. Well, neither is yours. If you believe that it is not, there's no hanky-panky going on. If it is randomly distributed, you might as well just use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's not going to happen. Neither is your number. Astronomers, speaking of odds, astronomers have located an asteroid that is possibly on a collision course with Earth. The asteroid could hit the Earth in 2029, triggering untold destruction and the end of tens of thousands of species, including the human race. The odds of the asteroid hitting the Earth are currently set about 300 to 1, but those odds will probably lessen as more is learned about the asteroid's orbit. So why aren't the nations preparing for this catastrophe? Because it ain't going to happen and you ain't going to win the lottery. So start saving now, right? And that's the key. As we saw back in chapter 1, a little bit of money coming out. Of course, if the asteroid does hit, you're going to have plenty of warning to go out and spend all your savings on a really great time. Okay, let's get started. You already know the number one financial goal. What's your number one financial goal? Which one do you like? Spend less than you earn. Pay yourself first. Yeah. And I added frugal, which I'm... whatever. I love make love, but that's my favorite. I just love to tell people, make love, not loans. If you follow goal number one, everything else with regard to investing is easy. What you do is you look at your time frame. Remember short term, intermediate term, long term, short term, 1 year or so, intermediate term, long term. You choose an appropriate investment vehicle for the time frame. And today we're going to burn through, you got your ABCDs? We're going to burn through the major investment alternatives. Now, a few of you are in 123, so you're going to go, yeah, Payano, I already noticed. My apologies. It's paced. And then you can, get some tips on how to explain it to other people. And then we'll look at each one in detail. The first one we look at, actually, unfortunately, in my humble opinion, is bonds. Why? Because that's the way the book set it up. I apologize. I like to do stocks first because they're a little bit more exciting. Stocks are more exciting and they're what you as young folks really should concentrate on. But they're risky! Whereas bonds are boring, but oh well. And then we'll look, we've already discussed cash in some, when we got the savings accounts. Annuities, real estate, tricky but very profitable, and then some of the others. But the book says these are essential before you invest, and I don't agree. They want you to pay off your high interest credit card debt first. And Eric's nodding, no. Because then you'll never, your credit, there's another emergency, oh my God, there's another $1,000 on the credit card. So get started while you're paying off the credit card. Get started with $25, $50 a month. And then they want, you'll hear this over and over again in the financial media, start an emergency fund. You want to have 3, 6, 9 months of living expenses. Like, I don't agree. That doesn't mean I'm right, but the wealthy barber agrees with me, and you have adequate insurance. I don't agree with the concept of an emergency fund. As long as you have access to cash, home equity line of credit, credit cards, worst case scenario, why keep $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 sitting in a savings account earning 0.1%? It just doesn't make sense to me. But there are exceptions. Anybody in sales? Anybody in sales? What kind of sales?
Electronic.
I'm sorry?
Electronic.
Electronic. Well, that's pretty steady. Yeah, it's pretty steady. Yeah, consumer goods, that's pretty steady, but there's probably some cyclicality. But if you're doing car sales or home sales, mortgages, you're really cyclical. And what happens is when the good times are burning, boy, you're making money, especially those mortgage brokers. Oh, my goodness. If after a couple of years you're not making $150,000, $200,000 a year, you're not trying. And then all of a sudden there's a recession. And what happens? You're done, right? Exactly. You have an instant vacation. The phone stops ringing, the car sales stop, the mortgages slow down. So these people, or if you're self-employed, you need a serious emergency fund. You need a ton of money sitting in a savings account somewhere so that when the recession hits, you're not in deep kimchi. But for the vast majority of us who could go out and get another job pretty readily, I don't agree. But it doesn't mean I'm right. You decide. Now, I'm not saying you should only have $17.87 in your savings account. You should build up some kind of savings, but not 50 grand. All right, so some terms. Safety. People tend to think of safety as a guaranteed return of principal. But as we're going to see, when you go too safe, you really are shooting yourself in the foot over the long term, especially for young people. And there are all kinds of risks that we'll discuss. Inflation risk, interest rate risk, these are bonds. Business failure risk, stocks, market risk, stocks, and then globally investing is a little tricky. But this gentleman was a very famous humorist in the mid-20th century. I'm not so much concerned with the return on my money as I am with the return of my money. And the Great Recession put a psyche into their minds, the folks in the early mid part of the 20th century. They were terrified of stocks. terrified. And it's happened a little bit now since the Great Recession of 2008. Liquidity. Can you sell your investment easily? Most of these, yes. A couple of these, no. So, what's your tolerance for risk? Well, there are all these, you can check it out on the web. There are dozens of them. And what they say is, okay, somebody gave you $1,000, and then they gave you a chance to win another $1,000 or lose it all. Would you keep the $1,000 or would you go with the chance to make another? And you don't know because it's not real money, right? If your investment lost 50%, what would you do? Sell immediately, buy more. You can't know how you're going to feel until you have some skin in the game, and then you lose some of that skin. And that's what, how'd you do? Piece of cake? Okay, excellent. Well done. And then where's your Scantron? Right there, and then here's your... Okay, excellent. Let's put that over there. And what I do as a professional, this is what I do. After somebody has gone through a downturn, I'll call them up and say, okay, how do you... Because that's when you make your money, when there's a downturn. How you feeling? You're a little nervous? Oh, I don't even look at it. I didn't even look. Great, that's great. Good, we can be more aggressive. And then when you say, yeah, I lost $100. I say, you want to know how much I lost? Then those people need to be more conservative. So everybody is different. So where do you get the money to invest? Where do you get the money to invest? Everyone should say, see, it's here. Where do you get the money to invest? Right. 401Ks, 403Bs, we'll take a look at them in more detail when we get to the end, chapter 14. They come right out of your paycheck. Or a Roth IRA comes out of your checking account. What we do, because we get paid once a month here, is I set up so that my wife and my Roth IRAs are taken out on the 2nd. So we get paid the last day of the month. You see it go in your checking account, and then 2 days later, poof, it disappears. So before you get a chance in your grubby little hands, well, this is better, the 401k, the 403b, because it doesn't even, you don't even see it go into your checking account. It goes right from your paycheck. They work like a pay raise, only in reverse. By paying yourself first, you get used to that bill as if it were a cell phone payment or a mortgage payment or whatever. How much do you need? How much do you need? How'd you do?
All right.
Okay. How much do you need? What does it say? Yeah, $50. When people say, oh, no, I don't know if I can afford to invest. I say, how much is your cell phone payment? And what do they say? $50. It's supposed to be $80. It's supposed to be $40, but I download a lot of ringtones. You know, some people say, well, I want to wait till I got about $5,000 and then I'll, hey, it ain't going to happen. Just start putting the $50 away. Small amounts invested regularly become large amounts over time. Obviously, the more the better, but it's better to get started now with $25 if you can, and then to lazily dream of a day when you'll get, be able to do some more. You can always increase this amount. This year, $50, next year, $55. Can you do that? One fewer trip to $5? I'm going to show you that because that's a really strong strategy. Start now with 50, next year 60 if you can do it, or if you get a raise it. So here are, I know I'm not very artistic, I apologize, but here are two buckets, bins, whatever you want to call them, bolsas. And what happens is people confuse the account, which is basically the bucket, with the investment that goes in the account. So we're going to discuss the major asset classes, stocks, bonds, cash, real estate. And if you don't do anything differently, when you open up an account, the IRS calls it a regular account, a taxable account. And that means every year you're going to pay taxes. Now, at first, if you're putting $50 a month away, it ain't going to be much. Several years from now, when it's a lot of money, you're paying taxes, congratulations, right? Because that means you're making a lot of money. And you can put anything in there. Now, I've crossed up the things I don't want you to even think about. Don't even look at them. When you move into the world of 401Ks, Roth IRAs, the Congress says, look, we're going to give you some perks, but we're going to limit the different types of investments that you can put your money in. We're not going to let you do really scary stuff, which can make you a lot of money or lose it all. Stocks are dangerous enough. And we're going to put a limit on your contributions. And I asked you in Chapter 3, Anybody remember what the limit on a contribution to a Roth IRA is?
$6,000.
Yeah, well done. It was $5,500. You still have until April 15th to do it for April for 2018, $5,500. You still have until next Monday, right? You still have until Monday. But for 2019, it's $6,000. $19,000 for 401ks. And you then get either tax-deferred income, so whatever investment rewards you get, you don't pay taxes on it until you retire, or in the case of the Roth, tax-free, which is very cool. And we will come back to that later. So here they are, dear students. I'm burning through this quickly. I apologize if I'm losing anybody. Just go help. Here they are. Here are the major investment alternatives. Have you heard about most of these? You can't help but hear about them. Stocks are cool, folks, but they're scary. And your Uncle Jim, or whoever it is, tells you how smart he is, she is, and then turns around and tells you about all the stock money they've lost in the stock market. Maybe he doesn't tell you. But when you invest in stocks, you are an owner. You are investing in a corporation. And that's why we often call stocks equities, because equity means ownership. What do we get? Why bother investing in stocks? We get two wonderful things: dividends and capital gains. Now, capital gains are what people think about. You buy a stock, it's going to go up, right? Right? That's the capital gain. But what many people don't key on are the dividends. Companies, when they earn extra money, any accountants in here? Any accounting? You heard about retained earnings, right? When they earn their money, they don't have to, but they can retain those earnings or they can distribute them to the shareholders. They can distribute them to the stockholders. And some companies don't pay any dividends, and other companies have been paying dividends for over 100 years. And we'll take a look at different types of companies when we get to stocks. So we get both of these. Are either of these guaranteed? The answer is hell no. Wait till I ask you. Are either of these guaranteed?
No.
Hell no. Right. Your company could go bankrupt and you could lose all your money. And there are many companies that have gone bankrupt. But there are many companies that have been around for decades and have rewarded their investors very well. So we say that stocks are volatile. You like that word? Volatile means I lost a lot of money. How's that stock you bought? Oh, it's been volatile. That means he bought it for $11.88 and sold it for 30 cents. Do you know anybody who's bought a stock for $11.88 and sold it for 30 cents? Yeah, I know somebody. I've known him all my life. He's kind of kooky. He teaches finance and investment. It was a really good stock. I mean, they were going to make an artificial blood, and it was so cool. It's based here in San Diego. So you can lose a lot of money, folks. But as we're going to see when we get to stocks can make us very, very wealthy. What can we expect over the long term? Stocks should be considered long-term investments. What can we expect? It's right here. 8 to 10%. Actually, some have done a lot better. And the market as a whole, depending on how you measure it, has actually done better. But what I tell people, 8, 9, 10%. We should expect 8, 9, 10%. Is it ever 8, 9, 10% in any one year? Sometimes, but usually it's 17 minus 4. 22, minus 12, you know, it's the variance, the standard deviation is wide. Now, you don't like that. Maybe it's a little too scary for you. Well, we have bonds. And when you invest in bonds, you are actually investing in loans. Huh? Doesn't make any sense. How do you invest in a loan? Well, when you go to the bank and you take out a loan, that's your debt, right? You owe that money to the bank. But banks, everything's reversed. The loan is their asset. That's the bank's investment. Does that make any sense? Because then they're going to receive interest and the principal back. Are you with me? Because when you grow up, you want to be a bank. And so this lets you be the part of a bank. Bonds are made not to individuals. Although, once in a while, you remember David Bowie? He issued bonds. $55 million, which in the bond world is very small. But he issued bonds, $55 million. Hey, I'm David Bowie. Would you lend me the money? And the bond world said, okay. And they got their money back. They got their interest. And what they promised to repay, I'm sorry, who does bonds? Not usually. REM, also the group REM did the same thing. But mostly you're dealing with corporations, state and local governments, also called municipalities. When we built the stadium, do you think we had a bake sale to build the stadium? No, we had to borrow the money, and so we loaned it out to investors who now we have to pay it back over 30 years. And the granddaddy of them all, the United States Treasury. And those entities promised to repay us interest and principal. Do most people pay back their mortgages? Do most people pay back their car loans? Yeah. And the same thing is true in the bond world. Most corporations, most municipalities, it's the Treasury. I don't care what anybody says. The Treasury is going to pay its debt. And so we find that the bonds are far less volatile, far less, let's use the word, risky than stocks. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? People who want to sleep well are going to buy bonds, right? But are you going to get better or worse returns? Yeah, that's something that no one is, someone's going to try to fool you, but no one can change. If you want higher returns, you're going to take more risk. And so in the bond world, we used to say 4 to 8%, and I'm keeping it where it is because I'm hopefully, come on, come back. Right now, bonds are paying far less than they did in the past. You can think of a bond like a mortgage. What were mortgage rates 30, 40 years ago? 6, 7%, right? And higher for some people who didn't have good credit scores, lower for people who do. But right now, bonds are paying 2 to 5%. Some are paying a little higher, but they're on the lower end. And that's a vestige of the Great Recession. And the economists keep saying interest rates are going to go up. You know, the economy is getting better, and interest rates are going to go up. Interest. And so the we'll go through that later on. All right. So, do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Well, if you're young and you take 121 business 123, maybe you'll learn that no, you want to eat well, you know. But those people who are really frightened, you know, it's emotions are involved here. There's two parts of investing, intellectual part, which is actually relatively straightforward, doing it right now, and then the emotional part, which you can't deal with your emotions. If you can't deal with your emotions, you're going to make some big, big errors. Okay, now, all right, now, what happens when you need, so we say that bonds are good for the long term for some people, and intermediate term. So they make good long-term or intermediate term. Cash. That's not the real name, but that's what everyone calls it. A better term is short-term investments, short-term vehicles. They are guaranteed or pretty darn close, and this is what we're talking about, safety. If you need this cash in 3, 6, 9 months, don't put it in the stock market. The stock market could lose 20% in 1 month. It's lost it in 1 week. It's lost it in 1 day. October 19th, 1987, market lost 23% in 1 day. Your $10,000 became $7,700. No. Is that 3%? No, $6,700. No, 77. I'm sorry, 23%. That's why you got calculators. Would you be happy that day? Yeah, so they didn't buy more. No. Bonds can lose money too, as we're going to see on Tuesday. Bonds actually go down in price. How can a loan go down in price? But if you need this money in 6 months, 3 months, a year, you want the safety or what we call guarantee of principal that is given to us by savings accounts, money market accounts, CDs, and the various types of short-term investments. But if we're going to get something guaranteed, right, you're lucky to get 2 to 5%, but in nowadays you're getting 0.1%. Actually, they're down up to about 2.5%. Some of them a little higher, 3% CDs, you can see. So they're creeping up. But Pinche Trump wants them to kick it back down. A few years ago when Obama was in the White House, he wanted the Federal Reserve to raise rates. Now he's in the White House. He wants to wants to kick the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates. So, you got it? Is this for long term? Hell no. Although you find people, when they find out that, you know, I supposedly know what I'm doing, they go, well, I've been saving all my life and I have $500,000 in the bank. And I go, oh, really? And the banker is licking his chops, paying him 0.1 or 0.5% and lending it out at 18%. The banker loves it. That's why when you grow up, you want to be a bank. And I try to get, you know what? You really should take my Business 123 Introduction to Investment Studies. Now, the next category, which is, notice these are bold, right? You like that? Is bold cool? Yes, bold is cool. That's not bold. What are annuities? Well, we touched on these on Tuesday, right? They're actually life insurance products. That life insurance companies are often called the invisible bankers. And there's a good reason for that. And they have two different types of annuities. Fixed annuities, which typically invest in bonds, and variable annuities, which typically invest in bonds and stocks. I'm making it simplistic. Now, wait a minute. We said that bonds over the long term have paid us 4 to 8%. And the stock market has paid us 8 to 10%. But fixed annuities, which invest in bonds, are 2 to 6%. And variable annuities are 2 to 8%. Where's the other 2% going? It's going to the insurance company. And if you can sell annuities, folks, you can make a bundle of money. You can't have any assets, right? You have to basically not care about your clients, but you care about yourself, right? And who's the most important person in this world? You are. And that's why here are all some annuity solicitations. But once you get your life insurance, and we teach this, folks, here, believe it or not, thank you. We teach this here, and you can get your life insurance license, and then you're going to get this in the mail, right? This is what you're going to get in the mail. Go away. This is what I got. Remember, I'm an insurance agent. This is what I got in the mail. They didn't know I was going to turn it into a lesson in my class. This is for the insurance, the annuity salesperson. Is this for the annuity owner? No. They will send you on a 7-day Caribbean all-expense cruise if you can sell this crap. I mean, these products to individuals for their financial planning and future. You get the feeling I don't really like these companies? I could sell these things. I won't do it. In fact, I'm not going to go into that. But you got it? Any questions? Any thoughts? Now, how does it make you feel? You're just stone cold silent. What?
They play this.
They play you, yeah. And I get into, one time this guy was about ready to punch me out when I was saying I thought these things were crap and I wouldn't sell them. And he got really angry. I was at a conference with other nerds. I'm not nerds. At the other conference. With other stockbrokers and insurance agents and financial representatives or whatever you want to call us. And he was getting angry, and his buddies were trying to calm him down because he was about ready to punch me out. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to fight you. I'm a coward's run in my family. So remember, do you want to buy an annuity? No, don't do it. Don't do it. They suck. Okay, now next, real estate. Who wants real estate? Well, you know, it ain't easy, folks. It ain't easy, and we'll discuss it when we get the real estate. But you're almost always going to, not always, but people are going to want to buy their own home, right? And so when you buy your own home, you're already an investor, right? It's a home first, in my humble opinion, but it's also an investment. But if you want to enter the world of investment real estate, it ain't easy, especially in Southern California. I mean, you're up against the best investors in the world, best real estate investors in the world here in San Diego, Los Angeles. If you move to another area where it's not as competitive, it's a whole lot easier. Actually, folks, I think the best investment deals here in real estate are in TJ now, in Rosarito, and in Sonata. I mean, that's where I think. That's where I've been looking. I don't know. I have to. I'm not a Mexican citizen, so I got to set up this corporation. Stuff is going to be cheap, not expensive, but it's interesting. What do we get from real estate? What do we get from real estate? Yeah. Over the long term, we've gotten 7 to 8%. Now, the real estate investors will jump up and down and say, Mr. Pagliano is not comparing apples to apples, and they're absolutely right. It turns out that the way you invest in stocks, bonds, cash is very different than the way you invest in real estate. So it turns out this number is actually a lot higher. But if we just looked at it, if we compared the two, which is not a fair comparison, we're going to get rent, and we're going to get capital gains. And it turns out that stocks do better financially if you look at them the way we look at stocks and bonds. But as we said, no. Real estate's done much, especially here in Southern California, in the Bay Area even more, Chicago, New York, up and down the East Coast, where real estate has just gotten incredibly expensive. So, cool, these are the main four. Stocks, bonds, but there are ways to invest in real estate that are not as tricky, they're not as profitable, but they're easier to get involved. And then there are other investment alternatives that I hope you will avoid unless you know exactly what you're doing, because most people just don't. It may be a great hobby. Anybody want to invest in cars in here? I got one person in you, that's right. And then I got another guy in the online class who's into classic cars. But he knows how to fix them. He knows what cars are desirable and which cars are just forget it, junk. Just because you want to own a AMC Gremlin doesn't mean it's going to be worth anything any day. But if you can own a BMW 2002 or M3 and keep it from being, don't crash it. That's the one thing about investing in a car. You can crash it. Okay. So what is your choice? What is your choice? If the choice is long-term retirement, building wealth over your working career, then my choice is high-quality stocks. Although some people prefer bonds because they are less risky than stocks. But it's not an either-or. You can have a combination. We'll take a look at what's called a balanced approach. If the goal is intermediate term, then bonds or real estate investment trusts, what are those? They're a way to invest in real estate without having to come up with $200,000. If the goal is short term, you have no choice. You've got to put your money in a CD, a money market account, a savings account. Although in 123 we learn how bonds close to maturity can act as short term investments, but not in this class. And the others never make any sense, except for people who know what they're doing. I mean, you we'll talk about this more along, but do you remember Beanie Babies? Beanie Babies? I mean, it was crazy. These things, for the price started levitating. And if you knew what you were doing, yeah, you could make a lot of money, but most of the time you probably just bought the things and now they're sitting in a closet somewhere. Great! Oh, I'm buying stocks and bonds. How do I get started? Well, you don't actually buy the stocks and bonds. For the vast majority of us, the best investments are mutual funds that are going to buy the stocks and bonds for us. Now, I want you to memorize these two things because these are the cool, fabulous, fantastic reasons that we love mutual funds. We get professional money management. You won 23 classes. Do you remember this? I hope so. And you get instant diversification, both of which can be very, very cool. Certainly diversification, if it's good diversification, is useful. And if these people know what they're doing, they are very well rewarded, certainly, and they will reward you. But this is what, when you heard that we were going to discuss investments, didn't you think, oh, cool, I'm going to be buying, selling stocks, using my cell phone, and they don't have the baby commercials anymore, do they? Where the babies buying and sell stocks. That was e-trash, right? You got me all excited. Besides in their commercials on TV, Ameritrash and Snot Trade Show, everyday hardworking Americans just like me, happily and profitably buying and selling stocks all the time. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you have the discipline, courage, and brains to buy when everyone else is selling and sell when everyone else is buying? Yeah? You think you do. Everybody runs that way. What do? You run that way because you're human. And the people who didn't do that 100,000 years ago, they got the ones eaten by the tiger. But now that can get you in a lot of trouble. Do you have a strong background in finance, business, marketing, economics, politics, and history? Are you part of a global research team stationed all around the world? Because the world is global. You ever hear of Coca-Cola? You know where it's based? Atlanta. They make 80% of their money outside the United States. So even if every United Stater said, I'm never going to drink another Coca-Cola again, it'd still be a huge corporation. Do you have the time and resources to visit in person the companies you intend to invest in, plus their customers, competitors, and suppliers? Do you have enough money to buy at least 20 or more stocks representing various sectors of the economy? Because you need diversification. You need basic materials. You need energy. You need healthcare. You need technology. Most importantly, do you have a knack or intuition for recognizing unrecognized value? Everybody else sees this thing about that company, and you go, oh no, they're missing this part. Ah, that's why it's red. If the answer to two or more of these previous questions is no, especially the last two, money enough to buy 20 or more stocks, although there's a way to get around that, you can do it slowly, but the intuitive eye for value, stay away from individual stocks. If you don't have that intuitive eye for value, you can just wind up doing what everybody else is doing. Any idiot can buy Walmart. Who's the world's largest retailer? Walmart. The trick was to buy Walmart 40 years ago, 30 years ago, when it wasn't the world's largest retailer. Who was the world's largest retailer 40 years ago? Close. Not Sears. Kmart. You don't believe me, do you? You never heard of a Blue Light Special, Kmart Blue Light Special? The trick was to buy Walmart 40 years ago when they were in St. George, Utah, and Bentonville, Arkansas. The most of us urban people, would we drive 2 hours, 100 miles, would we do that to go shopping? No, we're in the urban areas. They're building these 400,000 square foot places in the middle of nowhere. Now, St. George, Utah is big now, but then it was really small. And see, Sam Walton, came from a very small town. And he understood that people in the rural areas, they don't think twice about driving 2 hours to go shopping. I mean, it's just what they do. So he was able to get people to come from all around. And the genius was, hey, look, you have cousins, friends, who live across the other side of the state, they're going to go to the Walmart from their part. They'll drive 2-3 hours, and you'll drive 2-3 hours, and that's why they have greeters at the Walmart. The first time I walked into Walmart, I didn't want to. I was under duress. Hi, how you doing? But he understood the culture. Did I buy Walmart 30, 40 years ago? No. No. Okay. Bonds are also difficult. Since bond traders usually deal in tens of thousands of dollars, you're going to see some bond ads and they want $25,000 minimum. Although there is an exception at the Treasury. TreasuryDirect.gov allows you to buy bonds for $1,000, which is what they normally are, $1,000. Mutual funds are your best bet. And if it means anything to you, virtually all of my family's financial investments and my clients are in mutual funds. I certainly can't answer yes to all those questions. I didn't buy Walmart when Kmart was the world's biggest retailer. So here, I made this. Are you proud of me? I know. My brother got the gene. I didn't get the artistic gene. Here we are. We're the little people, right? And more of them are women. These are women. Because women are realizing, guys are dumb. It's already been proven women are better investors than men. It's already been statistically proven. I'll let you decide why. And some of you are looking at your grandmother or great-grandmother or mother, whatever, and the grandmother let the man of the house, that's a man, make all the decisions. He said, don't worry, little lady, I'll take care of this. And he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And then he died. And now she's penniless, right? So women are not going to make that mistake again. Remember that, guys. Be good to the women. I told you about the assassin, right? And so we're sending our $2,500 a month, more if we can afford it, to the people in the top hats. These are the mutual fund investors. And I know it doesn't look like a woman, but that's a woman. Because I said, it turns out that women make better investors. So ladies, women, whatever, female variety, there's a future for you in the industry. Can you speak Spanish? They need more bilingual. You move to El Cajon, they need more Arabic, Somalian. No matter where you are in the county, they need Tagalog, right? So they want more minorities. I don't care if Pinche Trump says in his supporters. The world is global. And so what they do is they create a pool of money, because there are millions of people through their 401ks, their retirement plans, their Roth IRAs. They're sending billions of dollars to these people. So they create these pools of money. And I know it kind of looks like a potato. My apologies. But these things are filled with money. And what do? They buy the stocks for you. They decide. That's their job. Some of them are very good at it. Some of them not so good at it. Or they buy the bonds. Or they buy the short-term instruments, the cash instruments. And if they buy the stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. How that works. If they buy a bond, it's called a bond mutual fund. If they buy the short-term investments, it's called a money market mutual fund. Although people just throw away the term money market, the mutual fund, and they call it money market. And we see the beginning of the expansion of mutual funds with what are called balanced funds. We invest in stocks and bonds. And they don't buy 5 or 10 or 20 stocks. They buy 100 or 200 or 500 stocks. So if one company goes Enron, you ever hear of Enron? Or Kodak? Now there's a sad situation. They developed the digital camera. That put them out of business. They developed the technology to put them out of business. Because you don't know this, but you go into any grocery store, any drug store, any convenience store, there'd be these little yellow boxes that Kodak film. And so one company goes belly up, it's not the end of the world. If you only own 5 stocks, ouch. Cool? You like diversification? Cool. And so, what are we doing? Yeah, okay, good. That's my thing. It doesn't matter. So, how do you pick a mutual fund? Well, that's the hardest part about mutual funds. The hardest part about mutual fund is actually deciding which one to, because there are thousands of them out there. You want to invest, and we'll discuss this in detail when we get to chapter 13. High quality. You want to look at mutual funds that are interested in quality. Now, quality is a very difficult thing to define, but you see it, you know it when you see it. Is well diversified across several industries, sectors of the economies, countries of the world. Has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, in my humble opinion, a management team with many years of experience. You want to avoid companies that shuffle their managers like a deck of cards. Now, thankfully, this is not happening as much as it used to. It used to be prevalent. If you are a mutual fund manager, first of all, you came from a really good school. You came from a Wharton or a University of Chicago, Harvard, Yale, Stanford. And then you had to pass some very stringent tests. Now, you're a mutual fund manager. Here's $1 billion, kid. Let's see what you can do with it. And you had basically about 18 months to 2 years to turn that into a whole lot of money. So what typically happened is these people would roll the dice. They knew. They're not stupid. You know, they made it through all these things. They made it through. They know that they only got a couple of years to produce. So they would typically be more aggressive, which is great if it works out, and not so great if it doesn't work out. What do they care? They were going to lose their job anyway. And now the companies are going, they look at the companies that did well because of giving their managers 4, 8 more years. And so that, thankfully, is more what we see. And has been around for decades and performed consistently well in good and bad markets. When somebody wants to show me something, look how well this is done. I said, I'm not interested. I don't want to see how well it's done in a good market. I want to see how well it's done when the organic matter hits the ventilating device. Because it's going to happen. You don't know when. You never know when the markets are going to fall. I mean, you've got a feeling. My buddy and I, we knew 2008. We knew it's coming. It's coming. I thought 20%. He said, no, 50%. I thought, come on, Jim. He was right. But I want to see how well you did when that happens, because some people really do poorly, and that will ruin your long-term results. If you lose 80, 90%, oh, man, you have to do 1,000% to catch up. The numbers going down are a lot harder than the numbers going up. So we'll see some mutual funds when we get to chapter 13. So how do you purchase a mutual fund? Normally a little bit at a time. Virtually all mutual funds will allow you to start an automatic investment plan with as little as $25 or $50 a month. Does this sound familiar? It's hard to invest in stocks with $25 a month or bonds. It's impossible in real estate. So you do it through your 401k, 403b, your paycheck, or from your checking account, savings accounts. There are some mutual funds. You're going to see some mutual funds that say, no, we want $3,000 minimum or $25,000 minimum. Look, you don't want those anyway. They're usually highly specialized. And investing a fixed dollar amount periodically is called dollar cost averaging. Now, you're not going to remember this. It's a horrible name. I've racked my brain trying to come up with a better name, but I haven't been able to. If you come up with a better name, we'll patent it and market it. But it's called dollar cost averaging. It's a very simple procedure. It's a system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount, $50 a month, $100 a month. And you see, this is the best part. This is what takes the emotions out. With dollar cost averaging, no matter what happens in the morning, there's good news. My wife, when I first met my wife, she was terrified of stock markets. She didn't want anything to do with it. And I don't blame her. You know, lots of people are like that. So I'd say, Anita, because that's her name. Anita, no matter what happens when we wake up in the morning, there's good news. The market's up. Good news. You don't sound excited. Your market's up. Good news. Woo! Yippee! Your $100 is now $100.25. The market's down. Good news. Why is the market being down? Good news.
Stocks are on sale.
Stocks are on sale. When do you run into Macy's or J.C. Poopies? When they say 100% off, we just raised our prices 100%. Quick, run in the door. Is that when you run in? No. When they lower their prices. So next month, when that $50, $100 a month comes out of your paycheck or your checking account, you're going to buy more shares at a lower price. You see this? What's going on? It pulls the emotion out. What you'll hear people say, and I think we've already said it, is when the market goes up 100%, what do they say? Did I do this already? Ooh, is it too late to get in? Yeah, when you hear people say, ooh, is it too late to get in, it usually is too late to get in. And then when it falls 40% or whatever, what do you hear people say? Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah, it's too late to get out. Now's the time to be getting in. So that's what dollar cost averaging does for us. And if you can come up with a better name, please do. So, now it all sounds so boring, right? Doesn't it sound boring now? $50 a month, I'm investing. I'm not going to buy Titter or Netflix or whatever. In the investment world, boring is good. Some of the best investments over decades have been some of the most boring investments. After you have built a solid foundation of high-quality stock or bond investments through mutual funds, then you can play the market. I hate that term. I used to take a little bit of our money and I put it into what I called the Vegas Fund. And it lived down to its name. Okay? Take no more, 5 or 10%. Choose your own stocks. Be prepared for volatility. That euphemism for I lost a lot of money buying a stock at $12, selling it at 30 cents. And I didn't lose a lot of money, thankfully. I didn't lose a lot of money, but, you know, it's no fun to lose money. Okay, so that is what we're up against. We're going to teach you how to invest in a boring way. And hopefully you'll be excited about that. Now, coming attractions. We're not done yet. We're trying to burn through this as quickly as possible. Because you want to do the bond calcs today, and then we'll do them again on Tuesday. So, today and on Tuesday, we will discuss bonds. Boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds. And then we have our exam, and then we discuss stocks. Oh, exciting stocks, sexy stocks, risky stocks. Because stocks can make us very, very happy, very, very wealthy, or very, very sad. And then we'll tie these two together with mutual funds, which is what the vast majority of us are going to invest in. But if you really do get excited about stocks and want to be able to pick your own stocks, my recommendation is to take Business 123. It's online for free. You don't have to sign up for it. But we teach the classes if you're going to go on into the industry, stockbroker, insurance agent, mortgage broker, finance, real estate finance, or banker, right, loan officer. Because the industry is huge. Did I mention the salaries are higher than the national average? Did I mention that? Let me mention it. The salaries are higher than the national average. When you grow up, you want to be a bank. Okay, but insurance is boring, but everyone needs it. And then we'll take a day to look at real estate and why we say that real estate's tricky. You've got to come up with tremendous sums of money. Plus, you've got to deal with the PETA factor is huge. And then the others. And then we'll be ready for the end of the semester. That'll take us to the end of the semester with retirement and estate planning. Cool? So you get an education? Now it's kind of sad that we're here starting investments now, and we've lost the people who are gone. We've lost them already. But we got them with chapter one, where we showed them that there are investments that have done well over the long term. Sure. Okay, so now, got your ABCDs? ABCDs. This is called checking for comprehension. Who needs A, B, C, D? Okay. What are investment companies that pool their investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? Investors get diversification and professional money management. Short-term securities, cash, stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Right, look at all those Ds. Mutual funds. You know, the legal term is investment company, which I like a whole lot better. But you're not going to hear that unless you work in the industry. Does an investment company make a whole lot more sense? You need cars, you go to a car company. You need shoes, you go to a shoe company. You need insurance, you go to an insurance company. You need investments, you go to an investment company. Don't go to an insurance company. Okay, what are investments that represent ownership in a corporation? Investors receive optional dividends and capital gains or capital losses. BBBBB. Yeah, those are stocks. Stock investors are part owners of the corporation. Believe it or not, you can own FedEx, you can own Nike, well, not the whole company, but you get to own a little bitty piece of it. How about fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, state and local governments, the federal government? Investors receive interest and a promise to repay the loan. These are bonds. Bonds are often called fixed income investments because we know exactly what we're going to get unless the bond goes into default, which is very rare. And then lastly, what are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return? They are usually guaranteed or pretty darn close. There is a huge opportunity cost if you leave your money here for the long term. These are short-term securities, cash, short-term interest, low risk, low return. Excellent. Now, this is not ABCD. What are reasonable expectations from stocks?
8-10%.
Everyone say 8-10%? Wait till I ask you. What are reasonable expectations from stocks?
8-10%.
If we have a long-term perspective, don't panic and the world doesn't end. What about bonds? Used to be 4-8, right? And we'll keep that. But really, they're a lot less right now. Short-term securities used to be 2-5%. Now you're lucky if you get 2-3%. And real estate? Yeah, but it's a whole lot higher. The real estate agents will want to skewer me for saying that. And then mutual funds, you don't know. It depends on what they invest in, right? They invest in stocks, it's going to be higher than they invest in bonds. And then the others, it's negative something. Okay. Stay away. Cool. Okay, so now, that was good. Now, did you learn? Did I go too fast? I hope not. Because now what we're going to do is we're going to go right to the end. We're going to go right to, got your hand out? We're going to go right to the calculations. So page number two. Page number two. Did you get one? I'm sorry, Nicole. There you go. There you go. There it is. Mr. Aaron Martos. Okay. Do it, the first calculation. Okay. First calculation is, where am I? Ah, what did I do with mine? Here it is. Okay, now, one of the things we're going to learn is that municipal bonds, state and local governments, have a really cool advantage. But for the vast majority of us working grunts, it's really not that big a deal. But for the very wealthy individuals in this world, it's a wonderful deal. And the deal is they don't have to pay federal income taxes on the interest. Well, this is part of our Constitution. The Constitution says that the feds can't tax the state and local governments. The state and local governments can't tax the feds. So Treasury bonds cannot be taxed by the states, and municipal bonds cannot be taxed by the feds. And what that does is it creates a tremendous opportunity for people in a very high income bracket, very high tax break. So let's take a look at the example here. This should look a little familiar. This is from chapter 3, basically. Whatever you're getting, you divide it by 1 minus your federal marginal tax bracket. And that gives you the after-tax yield. So in this case, if it's a 6% muni bond, we're in the 25% tax bracket, we take 6% divided by 1 minus 0.25, and it turns out we're actually earning 8% after tax. Let's do the one in the handout here. So this is number one, a married couple from California. Now, these are California residents. They're looking at 3 different bonds. They're in the 35% federal bracket, which means they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And they're in the 11% California bracket. They're looking at a 5% Arizona bond, a 4.5% California bond, and a 7.5% corporate bond. And if you didn't know about this, this tax exempt. The IRS doesn't like tax free. They don't like you to say that. They want you to say tax exempt. If you didn't know about this tax exempt advantage of the muni bonds, you would say, oh my goodness, the corporate bond's paying a whole lot more, right? Wrong. We've got to do the calculation. If we don't do the calculations, we're not comparing these things accurately. So let's take a look at the Arizona bond first. The Arizona bond is federal only tax exempt. That means California is able to tax. California can tax Arizona. Arizona can tax Texas. The states can tax one another, but they can't tax the feds. The feds can't tax the states. So this is a California couple. They live in California. So if they buy an Arizona bond, it is federal only tax exempt. The state of California will say, we want you to pay taxes on the interest. So that's the first formula. That's one right up there. So what's the return? What's the interest rate from the Arizona bond? What's the interest rate from the Arizona bond? 5%. People in the chat, you guys still awake? 5%. And what is our federal tax bracket? So we take 5% and divide it by 1 minus 35%, and we know what is percentage? 0.05, not 0.5, that's 50%. And what this is 0.35. So 1 minus 0.35, got your calculators out? 0.65, 0.05. What are we getting? 0.7692. Oops, 0.0. And you can leave it like that. You don't have to change it to a percentage, but if you want to, this is what you would change it to. Move the decimal point 2 to the right. So look what's going on here. You have to find a corporate bond paying at least 7.692% to be equivalent to the Arizona bond. You understand? Maybe yes, maybe no. This guy, any money we make from this guy, we have to pay taxes on. So how much money do you make on 7.5%? All bonds in this class, at least, are $1,000. Multiply 1,000 times 7.5%, 7.5%. You're looking at me like, you know, what the hell are you talking about? Well, I do it. $75. That's how it works. That's why they do $1,000 increments. $75. A 3% bond would pay you $30. A 6% bond would pay you $60. These are tough questions. Are you sure you can get these right? That's why they use $1,000 increments. So that corporate bond is paying us $75. How much is the Arizona bond paying? $50. Right? It's a 5% bond. How could this be more than that? Do you pay taxes on that $50? Do you pay taxes on the $75? What's the tax rate? 35%. Multiply that times 35%. And how much are we sending to the feds? $26.25. So we're sending $26.25 to the tax man. So you have to subtract that $26.25 from the $75 that we received. You see what's going on? How much are we left with? $48.75. So this guy is paying us more after taxes. You see why municipal bonds have a big advantage over corporate bonds? Now, the advantage grows as this number goes up. And it disappears for those of us in the lower tax brackets. You might as well buy the corporate bond. And that's why when we were at this meeting, I was in the audience. They were talking about the bonds that we sold to build up the campus. And one of the governing board members was saying, we need to advertise this to the local community so that the people in the South Bay can buy our bonds. And I'm going, no. People are not buying. Maybe if they're Bonita, you know. Who buys the municipal bonds?
Corporations.
Not so much corporations. Corporations might, but very wealthy people. Very wealthy people. Rancho Santa Pe, Dalmar, up there in La Jolla, and up in Beverly Hills, in those areas. So very, very wealthy people like bonds. Did I lose you? Got real quiet. Okay. Now, this gets even better for the wealthy. If you're a California resident and you buy a California bond, California says, cool. You don't have to pay federal. Well, that's always the case for muni bonds. But we will also waive the state taxes. Not this wave. This wave. We will forego. We will forgive the state taxes. So this muni bond uses a different formula. And that's the second formula. See the formula down here? You take the muni bond yield, 4.5%, and you divide it by 1 minus the federal, 35%, plus this, oops, I say it's 11, right? Do-do-do, keep me on my toes. 11%. So you get to add in this usually happens at the very end of the semester. That's how I'm getting old. Okay, you have to add in the state tax bracket. So what is this? This one's a little tricky, right? Can you get this one? 4.5%, which becomes... I just want to make sure. And if you don't know how to do that, contact me. We'll help you. It's not that hard. And then this is 0.35. This is 0.11. 0.35 plus 0.11. You guys got the calculator. And then don't forget the 1 minus 0.54. Everybody with us? Everybody with us? So, take the 0.045 divided by the 0.54, and what do you get? 8.333333. So, this guy, and we like to use at least 3 digits of accuracy, maybe 4. The California bond, even though it's paying the least amount of cash in our pockets, after taxes, we have to go out and find a corporate bond that's paying at least 8.33% before it is taxable equivalent. Now, if you run the numbers again with a typical person's tax return, 15, you know, poo, you'll find, no. So the muni bonds are already stacked against the vast majority of us working grunts. They're for the wealthy. Questions, thoughts? Piece of cake? Yeah, it is not that. You guys, the cool thing. You guys are going, But the world of finance, the investment world, my apologies, it's my industry, we do our best to make it so that you feel that you'd never understand this stuff. We'll take care of it. We'll take 1%, 2% from you. But we'll take care of it for you. But then when you explain to people, they go, that's not that hard. I can figure this out. And as I said, there's a future for you. So then in the presentation on Tuesday, we'll go through this. I skipped over this one. I apologize. Now, an inverse relationship. All right, so now, the current yield. In this class and in the 123 class, we always use $1,000. There are some bonds that are $5,000 and $10,000, but most of them are $1,000 increments. You buy a bond, it costs you $1,000. Well, maybe not. It might cost you more. It might cost you less. Huh? How does that work? Well, bonds go up and down in price. Not like stocks. Bonds go up, bonds go down, but not like stocks. The stocks go up and down. But bonds, a little bit. And we'll discuss that on Tuesday. But let's say we want to know what the current yield is. Well, there are 3 different yields. The first yield is the nominal yield. It is also called the coupon yield, or coupon rate, but it means the same thing. Yield and rate mean the same thing. And that's very simple. If I ask you, what's the nominal rate or the interest rate on a 7% bond, what do you say? 7%. What's your name, Bob? Right? If I ask you what the nominal rate is on a 9% bond, you say? Okay, so that's easy, right? It's too easy. But the current yield might be different. What it's actually paying us might be different. Why? Because we might not pay $1,000 for it. We might have to pay $1,100, or we might get to pay a $900. It might be a premium bond. It might be a discount bond. And so that changes what we're actually going to get from the bond because we didn't pay $1,000. If we paid $1,000, then the nominal rate, the coupon rate, would be the same as the current rate, the current yield. And again, they mean the same thing. You'll hear people use both, the current yield or the current rate. And that's a very simple calculation. We take the dollar amount of interest, what we're getting every year, and we divide it by whatever the current market value is, whatever that bond is selling for. My apologies. Okay? So in the example here, there is a premium bond. It's selling for $1,100. It's not selling for $1,000. It sold for $1,000 when it was issued, but now it's crept up. It's gone up to $1,100. And it's a 6% bond. So what does a 6% bond pay us? $60. In dollars. Annual interest. What's the annual interest on a 6% bond? Everyone should say $60. Wait till I ask you. What's the annual interest on a 6% bond?
$6.
Not 6 cents. Don't put 0.06 because that means it would be a dollar bond if they had 6 cents. So what's the annual interest on a 3% bond?
$30,
right. What's the annual interest on a 10% bond? $100, right. So make sure you don't get tripped up on that because what people do in the exam, they'll put 6 cents. Not right. Okay, so let's get rid of this guy. Okay, so now, in this case, it's a 6% bond, so it's paying us $60. We had to pay $1,100 to get that bond. So So you take 60 divided by 1,100 and you get 4.45%. You see, it's less. If we had paid $1,000 for it, we would get 6%. But because we're paying $1,100 and it's a 60, and we're getting $60, we're actually getting 5.45%. Next one, I think, is a premium bond. And then if that bond we're selling for $900, a discount bond, then we're actually going to get more percentage because we're paying $900 for $60 worth of interest. 60 divided by 900 is 6.67%. Now, you're probably thinking, why would the bond price change? Well, that's what we'll discuss on Tuesday, okay? We might have time for it today. I don't think so. Yeah. Excellent. That's exactly correct. That's why we call bonds fixed. The interest rate changes. I mean, sorry. The interest rates in the economy change, but the interest rate in your bond doesn't change. Your bond remains fixed. Your bond will pay 6% until it matures, like a mortgage, right? But what happens to interest rates in the environment, in the world, in the market? They're going up and down all the time, right? So because the interest rates are changing all the time, your interest rate will stay the same, but the price of the bond will go up and down. Make sense? At first you go, huh? How can a loan? It's a loan for $1,000. How can it be anything? Well, it's because you might have an awesome interest rate, and now other people trying to buy new bonds are getting horrible interest rates. Are you going to sell your $1,000 bond? No. Give me mas. Give me more and I'll sell it to you. Okay, all right, we'll give you more. That's how it works. So let's take a look at the number two here. And this has got one of the trick questions. A bond with a par value, face value 1,000. Remember, in this class, it will always be 1,000. The par value will always be 1,000. There are some bonds that are 5,000 and 10,000. It pays 5%, is currently priced at $950. So it's a $1,000 bond. But now it's paying 950. I mean, it's priced at 950 and it's paying 5%. So what's the nominal yield? What's the coupon interest rate? What's the nominal rate? 5%, right? Is that, what's your name, Bob? What's the nominal interest rate in a 5% bond? 5%. What's the current yield? Well, we need to know what the annual interest. What's the annual interest on a 5% bond? $50, 5% of 1,000. Because the par value, the face value doesn't change, the interest rate doesn't change. This bond will always pay us $50 until it's redeemed. And then you get your money back. Now, what's the market value? It says there, it tells you. We only had to pay $950 for this bond. This bond is a discount bond. It is selling for a discount. So you take $50 divided by 950, and what do you get? 0.0526. Is that right? 3. So you can leave it. Just, you don't have to change it. Don't change it. Just whatever your calculator says, you can just leave it. But normally what you'll see is this. You'll see 5.26, 3%. Usually you'll see at least 3 digits, sometimes 4 digits. Don't just don't round it to 1 or 2. Don't say 5%. You know, don't do that. I mean, it's not wrong, right? It's not incorrect, but you'll never see that in the industry because that's a big difference. If you just say 5%, if you round it to 5%, what that means is anything between 4.50% upwards of 5.49%. And in the bond world, that's a big difference. So you're not going to be wrong. I won't mark off for it, but make sure you use at least 2 to 3 digits of accuracy, maybe even 4. Okay. I'm sorry. 2 to 3 digits to the right of the decimal point, 3 or 4 digits of accuracy. If you take in chemistry, right, 4 digits of accuracy. Okay, so now, that was the current yield. Okay. Here's the yield to maturity. Ay, Paquito! Well, it's really not that hard. It's basically the same darn thing, except for one difference. The bond matures. The bond doesn't pay you $50 forever, right? It's going to mature 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You're going to get your money back. So the current yield just tells us what it's paying today. The more important one, especially if you tend to keep the bond and wait until it matures, is the yield to maturity. Sometimes you'll see it abbreviated YTM, yield to maturity. And what it's saying is, look, we're going to hold on to this bond for 10 years, 20 years, and then we get our money back. What kind of rate are we going to get in those 10 years? And what it does is it adds a couple of terms. There's the same term as we saw before, the annual dollar amount of the interest. But instead of dividing it by just by the market value, we divide it by the face value plus the market value divided by 2. That means we divide it by the average of the two. We paid $950 for it in this case, right? $900. We're going to get $1,000 when it comes back. What's the average of those two? So we'll divide by the average of those two. Then what we're going to do is we're going to add this term up here, which says, look, we paid, in this case, $900 for it. We're going to get $1,000 back. That means over the next 10 years, it's a 10-year bond, right, 10-year bond, you take $1,000 minus $900, that's $100. We're going to get that over the next 10 years, divide by 10. We're going to get an extra 10 bucks every year as it goes up back to $1,000. Is it really that difficult once you break it down? No, but people go, I can't do it. So on the exam next week, I'm going to ask you to do it. And if you don't know what the hell you're doing, don't worry. Just start plugging in numbers. And you'll be amazed at how much credit you get, okay? Because you got to put up with your bad formulas until you get them right. And then you don't give up. Don't give up, but do the best job you can. So now let's take a look at the assignment. Let's assume this bond here is a 10-year bond. So that means we're going to get our $1,000 back in 10 years. The par value, as always, is $1,000 in this class. And the market value is $950. It's a 5% bond. It's the same bond. But all we know now is that it's a 10-year bond. So, again, what's the annual interest on a 5% bond? Everyone should say $50. You might think I'm crazy. You may be right. But when you answer me, when you say it, you actually learn better. What's the annual interest on a 5% bond? $50. Right. $50. Now, I like to do, it doesn't matter which one you do, but I like to do the bottom first because I think it's a little easier. Remember, it's a $1,000 bond. That's what it's going to mature at. All of them are $1,000 bonds. But how much did we pay for it? What's the market value? $950, and then we divide by 2, which gives us the average of the face value, the $1,000, and the market value, what we had to pay for it. And that when you take two numbers and divide by 2, you get the average. So 1,000 plus 950 divided by 2. Some of you can do that in your head, but that's why we have calculators. What is it? 975. Now here comes the bad boy. This term is now going to take into account the fact that we're going to get a little extra every year. Or if it's a premium bond, we're going to get a little less. In this case, it's a discount bond. So you take the $1,000 and then you subtract the market value. This is where people get confused. This is a plus, this is a minus, yeah. And then how many years until it matures?
10 years.
So what's $1,000 minus $950? $50. I'm sorry, $50. $50. What's 10 divided by 10?
5.
So what's that saying? Yeah, every year we're going to get an extra $5. As it gets closer and closer to $1,000, every year this bond is going to go up in value by about $5. Now, it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes it goes up by more, down, interest rates change. But now you take $55 divided by $975, and people in the back in the cheap seats, where's your calculators? Come on, you play with your phone all day long. You might as well do the calculation. $564. So you see, we're getting a little bit of juice out of it. Currently, it's paying us 5.26, 3%. But the fact that we're getting an extra $5 every year, 5.64%. Bonds are indeed boring and easy. And if you get into the bond world, you're going to find that your clients are extremely wealthy, and you'll be rubbing elbows with the rich. And there are perks that come with that. There are disadvantages, too. Cool? Guess what? We're going to do these again on Thursday. But then we'll go back and start from the very beginning and describe what bonds are. And indeed, they are indeed boring, but we'll get to sleep well. Okay, so we'll see you on Tuesday. Study, do your assignments, turn them in even if they're late. Turn in your assignments even if they're late. They will help your grade, and I hope they will help you, your financial prowess. And have fun because the weather's finally getting better. Yay!